So, what I want to do today is organize the discussion or split the discussion into two parts. In the first part, I want to go over the reading. It's a very short reading. All our readings for these next three sessions are quite short, and I think that's good. It will give us a little more time to go into the practice side of things as well. And that's the second part of what I want to do. I want to really work in the roughly the second half of the meeting with the exercise that I mentioned last time, which is the exercise 5 in Dynamics of Time and Space, which is called Abiding in Thought. So we'll start off by talking about the reading, and then we will look at abiding in thought. We'll do some practice with it and discuss that. And part of what I want to do there is really clarify, if it needs clarification, how that exercise fits with the reading. But we will do that when we start talking about the exercise. So the reading starts on page 45 with that section called Space Knowledge. And of course, we're working our way slowly through this chapter, and that means that this is not a hard and fast break. It's not as though we're taking up a new topic when we start talking about space knowledge. We're talking about zeroless space, or a zeroless world, as Rinpoche writes. We're talking about a world in which we have flattened space. These are some of the themes from before. And we are also talking about a world in which there is this inward-outward knowing of ekgnosis, a knowing that is really built into, integrated into space. Once we start thinking about space in this zeroless way, and once we start to look at how that aspect of space supports appearance. And that's really what I want to focus on, just to make sure that that's clear. So I think the main thing, well, maybe there's two things. One thing that I really do want to emphasize, because it's easy to lose sight of it, this has practical significance. We are not just trying to figure out what in the world Rinpoche means when he talks about this. We're not just trying to feel clever because maybe we've understood it, or think we've understood part of it, or on the other hand, we don't want to feel dumb because we feel like it doesn't make any sense. We want to see what it's like to integrate this way of seeing and experiencing and understanding into our daily experience. So I think it's really fundamental to keep track of that, and it's easy to say that, but it's also easy to lose track of the fundamental significance, because this really is a very different way of seeing, and I think we need to keep that in mind. And if there, as we talk, as we discuss, if there are things, if you can't really see how to make the connection, please ask, because it's important. So Tsutoba says she was in her practice of exercise 5, she was seeing or experiencing her experience as also a thought. And the question is even experience really a thought? Well, let's save that for the second part of the discussion when we look at abiding in space. Certainly, as we said last week, or I think I said in the orientation, the way that Rinpoche uses the word thought here is very broad. But the point you're raising, Tsutoba, may be a little different from that, and we can look at it when we get to that section. So what I want to say at the outset, but I want to make sure we're agreed on, and it's very clear in the reading, is that when you arrive at a zeroless world, that's the way Rinpoche describes it in the reading for last week on page 44, And he says a zeroless world offers no blockage, no restrictions, no borders, no occupancy, no possession, no interruption, no point at the center, no point that encompasses the whole, no structure, no properties. I'm just reading through this paragraph. No structures founded on ownership. So the zeroless means that everything we use to structure our experience, make sense of our experience, all of that is not on offer in zeroless space. Zeroless space is underneath that or before that or however you want to say it. But at the same time, that zeroless world is not any different from our ordinary world. And that is really fundamental. It comes up in the exercise too, in Abiding in Thought, where Rinpoche writes that you know, we may think that we've entered, and that exercise is framed more in terms of time. We'll talk about that. But he says we may think we've entered a timeless realm, but in fact that realm is the same as our ordinary realm. And that's what Rinpoche says here. And really he says that at the beginning of the reading we had for today, right underneath the heading, the space knowledge heading on page 45. He says, space in its zeroless appearing allows substance to dissolve. So substance dissolves, but it doesn't lose its form. It doesn't lose its density. He gives some nice images there. It simply it dissolves, you could say, its substantiality. Right? Zeroless space appearing, he says, allows substance to appear as the appearance of substance. And in a way, that sounds self-evident, right? Zeroless, substance appears as the appearance of substance. Well, what else could it appear as? Yeah. But the point is that there's nothing but that appearance. And that, to look at Sudaba, at your question a little bit, I think that's where a connection comes in to the idea that experience and appearance and substance is all at least very much like a thought, because something appears without any substance. The substantiality of it disappears or dissolves. So everything that appears stays. You know, nothing gets swept away. We don't find ourselves in some realm where nothing at all is going on. The world is the same, but it's completely different. And this is one of the fundamental things about the TSK vision, of course, the reason that people have difficulty discussing it, or you know, we ask this question from time to time. We say, well, so what difference does it make to be studying TSK? What changes are there? And it's a very subtle point, because everything is the same and everything is different. And you may have a sense of that difference without really being able to describe it. And part of the reason for that is something that also comes up in this reading, that ordinary knowledge can't make sense of that difference. And that's, I think, ought to be very clear why that is. Ordinary knowledge is founded on substance. And so if somebody says, so what is it about TSK? Why do you study this? Why do you read this? Why do you think about it? Why do you do these exercises? What's the difference? What's the benefit? What are the consequences? And you say, well, it's very hard to describe. And then you feel a little silly, maybe. But it makes perfect sense, because description is linked to ordinary knowledge. It's linked to making distinctions and assigning names and labels and all of that. And so, you know, what can you say? There's no way to talk about that. So there's only the experience of it. But, well, I'm going to skip that point because we need, there's various things I'd like to cover. So Rinpoche, in the second paragraph of our reading, or is it the second paragraph? It's actually, let's see, what am I looking at? The point that I want to emphasize here, and maybe it doesn't show up until page 46, he talks about space as the power to accommodate. That's what I'm looking at, and I've just lost it here. That's why I'm a little bit, I'm going slowly here. Does anybody see that where he talks about space as the power to accommodate? I thought it was on page four. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. It's the italic right on. It is in that second paragraph at the end, on page 45. So he says, zeroless space, that whole paragraph's very short. Zeroless space accommodates, without difficulty or contradiction, the whole of what appears. So the fact that we're now focusing on space doesn't prevent what has substance from appearing. The transformation it makes possible functions at a different level. It is founded in the appearance of space as the power to accommodate. So space itself appears. And ordinarily, that's a problematic thing to say because space is in terms of substance, space is the absence of substance. And whatever appears in space has to be substantial in some way. That's our ordinary understanding. So space, of course, can never appear in space. Space can't appear at all. Again, that's our ordinary understanding. So what Rinpoche is saying here is that space can appear, but it doesn't appear as, certainly doesn't appear as substance. I think we would say it doesn't even appear as appearance in the sense of what ordinarily appears in space. It appears as a power. Specifically, it appears as the power to accommodate. And it's something like energy, the relationship of energy to mass, I think. That's not an example that Rinpoche gives, but maybe it helps to think about it. So it's like saying, how does energy appear in the world? Well, it doesn't actually. It only, its consequences. I mean, if something blows up, then you know that some energy was released, right? But energy itself doesn't really appear. Maybe that statement's too strong, but in general, I think that's true. Energy itself doesn't really appear. I mean, it may be too strong because, you turn on a light and you say, well, there's light energy, it's appearing, but it's not, it's matter, right? Matter is appearing. Or it's like if you plug something into an outlet, you plug a lamp into an outlet and it turns on, the energy is not appearing, right? You can say there's the light of the lamp, there's the wall socket, there's the light switch, there's the copper wires, there's all of those things, and they're all symbols and also conditions for energy to appear, but the energy doesn't appear. That's what I'm suggesting. And space is like that. So an example of that that I think is helpful to think about for a moment is what is the relationship of this space appearance, this appearance of space as the power to accommodate? What is the relationship between that and our ordinary understanding of space, of physical space, right? So if we say, well, does physical space appear? No, it doesn't. But there is a world in which objects appear in space. And space, you could say, space has this accommodating power, right? space can appear, can accommodate the appearance of physical things. So as you look around you, wherever you are right now, all these things that appear in front of you, including, of course, your body, but whatever else you're seeing or touching or aware of, it's all accommodated by space. More typically, we would say space contains it all, but here we're looking at space as an accommodating power. That's ordinary space. Okay? Karen asks, is space like probabilities in quantum physics? Well, you're asking the wrong person. I for two reasons. One is I don't know that much. I mean, I try to read around. I try to read about quantum physics because I think there are connections, but I don't consider myself to be an expert, or even that well informed. That's one reason. And the other reason is that I'm personally a little bit hesitant to try to make those connections, because partly because people's understanding of what quantum physics entails isn't really settled yet. It changes, and there are different interpretations. Having said all of that, I think yes, it might be helpful to say, space. When something appears before something appears, according to quantum physics as I understand it, there's a probability that it's going to appear. And it's only when there's a moment of observation, it's only, you could say, when there's an act of labeling, if you want to connect it to our usual TSK way of talking, only with that labeling, with that identification, does it actually appear. So before the act of labeling that specifies the object, there is the probability that it might appear here or it might appear there, and you could say that that is like, it's the potential or maybe the power to appear. So with all those qualifications, I guess my answer is yes, sort of. It's at least sort of like that. So
Jack,
yes.
maybe space accommodates quantum physics.
Yeah. Sure, I think that's right. You could also say, I mean, it's very interesting because, the other thing that people say about matter in quantum physics is that it's produced out of nothing. It's produced out of random fluctuations, which are only probabilities. And that does seem to have some of the flavor of what we're talking of here about zeroless space. And actually, it's taking us as I say, in a direction I don't know that much about, but when you think about space as, or rather, when you think about matter and you say matter emerges out of fluctuations in emptiness, the question is, where does the power of those fluctuations come from? How's the whole thing powered? And that starts to get us maybe closer to the point that Rinpoche makes here when he says that zeroless space depends on space appearing as the power to accommodate. And so, in a way, I want to ask the same question here. So we've already dealt with it to some extent. So my question is, if you look around you at the objects in space and you say space can accommodate all those objects, and the question is, where does that power of space to accommodate physical objects, where does it come from? It's the sort of question that's, it's difficult to get a grip on that question, but it seems as though there ought to be an answer or something that approaches an answer. How is it that space can accommodate objects? What is the aspect of space? I'm talking about physical, ordinary physical space now. What is it that gives it the capacity to accommodate objects? The answer that's given here is that there is an underlying space. There's an underlying zeroless space, and that and it appears as the power to accommodate. So you might say, okay, but where does it get its power? You know, well, it is that capacity or that power to accommodate. Here we are as a result of the operation of that power, which appears, and in appearing, it allows for the appearance of objects in physical space. It allows for our appearance as thinking, sentient beings. It allows for experience. It's this allowing, accommodating dimension. And if it weren't there, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So the question of, you know, where does it appear from, that's, I'm not sure how helpful it is. Probably the best I can say about that. So Rinpoche says that space appearance, so the power of space to accommodate, this is the very bottom of page 45, he says it marks the completely open of everything. Everything is allowed, and everything that's allowed shares in the completeness of its allowing. And then he says, that doesn't make any sense according to ordinary knowledge. So at the top of page 46, ordinary knowledge or ordinary logic. And actually, I had to think about that a little because I thought, well, we're talking about it. You know, it seems like logic allows for it. But I think the reason he says that, and I think the distinction that's being made here, is that our ordinary understanding and our ordinary space and everything that shows up in terms of substance and so on is all based on distinctions. There's this and there's that. There's here and there's now. There's from and there's to. And all of those distinctions. But this power of space to accommodate, which is zeroless space appearance, is complete. It doesn't leave anything out. It doesn't make any distinctions. There's no this and no that. And that's the part, I think, that ordinary logic can't really talk about. And that, although we're not going to quite ready to go there, but that is really what the exercise, what abiding in space is about. So before we do go, well, let me see. There was another question here from Sudaba. Okay, the space seems similar to awareness or luminous awareness and not much different. Well, you know, it is. I mean, the luminosity is related to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago is ekgnosis, this inward-outward knowing, which is inherent in space. I mean, you could say, I asked a minute ago, you know, where does the power of space, zeroless space, where does the power of zeroless space to accommodate come from? And you could say that it's a manifestation or it's inseparable from awareness or the inward-outward knowing of ekgnosis. So that's one way to make the connection. Okay, the only other point that I wanted to make about this reading before we look at the exercise is, and this is related to the point I made at the start, there are really significant consequences to looking at this level of space appearance and space allowing and the completeness that it opens up, because when we're at that level, then the limitations of our ordinary way of seeing and knowing and being don't operate in the same way anymore. He says, excuse me, he says we tend to hold on to what we think we have. This is toward the bottom of page 46. Even though we recognize that our perspective is limited, because we're afraid of letting go, we're afraid of losing, you know, whatever it is, whatever understanding, whatever structures we've been able to set up, if all that fell away, and that's the way that our ordinary knowledge would see this idea of you know, operating without limits, everything would become this big mush, you know, and you just collapse on the floor in a heap. We tend to see it that way. But the point is, nothing changes in the sense that appearance the appearance of substance continues to appear as the appearance of substance. Since that's so, what happens is new possibilities open. You could say nothing is lost, but many possibilities open, right? As he says at the top of page 47, there's no need for protection because there's nowhere to fall. Why is there nowhere to fall? Well, in terms of, you know, the beginning of this chapter, which we read a couple of weeks ago, because we've flattened space. So how could you possibly fall? There's nowhere to go. We flattened the ordinary dimensionality, the ordinary substantiality, and that doesn't mean that we're left with nothing. It also doesn't mean that we're left with things just the way they are. We're left with things the way they are, but as appearance. And the potential for accommodation is not exhausted in that appearance. Okay, so I think I've said enough about that. Maybe maybe too much. So I'd like to turn now to the practice, of abiding in thought. And I want us to practice with that for a few minutes and then discuss it. Let me just set it up a little bit. So one place to look is the exercise, for those of you who have the book with you, is on page 262. And so one question you might ask, let's start there, is that this is presented very much in terms of time, this exercise. It's presented more as a time exercise than a space exercise. But we're using it as a space exercise. If we came at it from a time perspective, we'd probably end up looking at different qualities. You know, these exercises are very open and there's many possibilities. But we don't have to look at it only in terms of time. There certainly is a lot of, you know, in the discussion and the comment to this exercise, there is a space dimension. So take a look at the first full paragraph on page 264. At the start of that, he says, abiding within thought leads toward a way of being that does not depend on the dimensionalization and substantialization of experience. And then he talks about the momentum of narrative, which is more a time issue. But here we're talking about no dimensionalization, no substantialization, and that is exactly what we want to be looking at. And in this discussion, in roughly the same place, Rinpoche says, it's not a question, again, of stripping things away, even though at first it may look that way. He says it may seem kind of cloudy or dull, but in the next paragraph down, he says, illuminated inwardly, the structures of thought do not give way to blankness. Instead, you will find yourself in contact with the intimacy of the image. Well, it's that going inward, it's that abiding that the exercise is really all about. And Rinpoche makes the point here that, again, talking in terms of time, he says, well, it may seem as though if you can abide in thought, you're stopping time. Time no longer flows forward in the same way. But in fact, this abiding within happens in the middle of the linear stream. It's like of time. There's two different dynamics. So what we're interested in is going into experience, abiding in experience, and recognizing the creative force, the energy, which we were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, the power of space. It's that same energy. There's this kind of manifesting, this kind of welling out. There's, you know, the words are a little difficult. There's a movement, a dynamic, and he says here in this exercise that it's not static, right? This is on page 262. He says this abiding invokes the dynamic rhythm of time. It also evokes the accommodating power of space, and that's really where we're looking. So what we discover is that there's a dimension of experience which is dynamic, which is alive, which involves the power to accommodate, and which also involves this inward, outward knowing. So when we see something, so say if I look in front of me and I see a clock, right? I'm going to ex abide, let's imagine, I'm going to abide in that experience of seeing the clock. And, you know, around the clock is the whole, my whole visual field, and there's what I'm feeling, and all of that may be engaged in various ways and at various levels. I'm going to abide in that, and what that means is that I'm tuned in to the accommodating, presenting dynamic and power of space and time. You don't have to separate it out, but we're focused on space. The dynamic, accommodating power of space to present what appears. I go into that, and in doing that, I discover a different dynamic, and I can abide there. Linear time is always moving on. There's no abiding in the moment. It's already gone. In this dynamic, which is spatial and temporal, you can abide. It's dynamic, and things don't stop, but there's an abiding. So that's, you know, as much as I can do right now toward describing it, but you've looked at the exercise. I think you understand it. You have a sense of what's possible here. So let's try it for 3 or 4 minutes. Never enough time, but maybe that'll give us a little chance. And then we'll have a few minutes to discuss it also. Okay, let's go ahead and do the practice. Okay, so let's come together. I will give you the chance to comment, report, ask questions, and while you may be writing a comment, let me just make a comment that's related to the question Sudhi asked at the outset. I pretty much ignored in this exercise the fact that it says abiding in thought, right? And I think that's legitimate because, you know, in the exercise itself, as we've pointed out, Rinpoche talks about thought, but he also talks about feeling or emotion. And I think there's a sense in which you could say, although maybe I'm saying too much, that this exercise could be called abiding in space. Maybe I'll have to make up my own exercise that's a little different, that's called that's called abiding in space. So Sudhi has a comment here saying it's awe-invoking, awe-inspiring, amazing. How does it all arise? Right, I think that's a wonderful question. How does it all arise? So, you know, there's this great philosophical question that people like to ask and have tried to answer since the beginning of philosophy, really. And that is, why is there something rather than nothing? And that's related to this practice, but this practice doesn't ask for the why. It doesn't ask for an explanation. It just says, you know, abide in the steady generation of appearance, in the power, the accommodating power of space. So Sudhi is saying it's just important to note this awesome experience and just take it in and not move out, but move in. Yes. Karen says there's always the readiness of a story to emerge. I think that's absolutely true. Well, it is true. sometimes that tendency, the readiness, may seem to subside, and you know, there's no push to make the story subside, emerge. It seems as though there's a more, you might say, a more pure dwelling or abiding. But sometimes you're always headed in that direction. You know, the next story is always already taking form. So one of the points here is that's fine too. You know, both things can go on at once. When the story emerges, that's how linear time gets set up. The next thing happens. But that's just another accommodation. It's just more another instance of the accommodating power of space. So it's good to be aware of that. It's very good to see that happening in your own experience. And David says, okay, so he's tuned into being seated in his chair, feeling an open, non-focused awareness, a warm, alive feeling of the body and internal spatial awareness. Right. So, you know, it could go, in a sense, we have three different things we've looked at, three different possibilities in these three comments. One is that you stay with experience, and I know that's not exactly what you said, Karn, but I'm kind of using your comment that way. You stay with ordinary experience. The next story emerges, the next moment emerges, the next thing happens, the next thought goes through the mind, and within all of that, there's the accommodating power of space. The second possibility is that you become more tuned in to the spatial dimension, and it's a kind of a non-focused awareness, as David writes. And the third possibility is that you know, there's a very strong sense of that power of space, which takes you deeper than that, and I think that's closer to what Sudhi is describing. They're all fine in terms of exploring what's being described here, and in terms of exploring our theme here about, what is zeroless space, and then, the next question, what's the significance of being able to contact that? And the way to explore that question is to do this practice or a related practice. You may find your own way of doing it. As we break up now, we're at the end of the session. You might try just staying with this sense of this richly knowing, richly accommodating, dynamic power of space that manifests in each new experience as it unfolds. That would be the place to look and to try to put that into your own experience and discover it from moment to moment. Michael has a comment, and I have one more comment, and then we'll stop. So Michael says he always finds that the intention to abide slows down thought to the point where thought gets replaced by a broader kind of vehicle for feeling and awareness than the usual nervous twitching of mind. So that's a little bit like what David said. Yeah. The effect is spacious and allowing until the next thought sweeps in. So the question would be, what happens when the next thought sweeps in? Why does that change anything? Right? Oh, and I missed Bruce's comment. Okay, the practice this time reminded me of an experience years ago with Jean Klein's teachings. I don't know who Jean Klein is, but where every arising object or thought or experience points to its home ground, called an active absence sometimes, or just simply welcoming. Both of those terms seem to me to be completely appropriate, an active absence and welcoming. Welcoming is not quite as strong as accommodating, but it certainly goes in the same direction. Okay, and the one comment that I wanted to make, and then we'll stop, it's based on something that Rinpoche says in the comment to this exercise on page 263. He says, abiding does not mean simply accepting whatever appears. And that's a very interesting distinction. At the point that I want to make, you can think about why, what is that distinction and why does he say that? What I want to use that observation for is just to say that we're doing something here that is a very active transformation. It's one of the things about the TSK vision. We're saying instead of accepting experience the way it ordinarily arises, let's really shift it by looking at this different dimension of, let's call it for now, zeroless space, right? So it's very different from a kind of ordinary meditative practice, especially a mindfulness practice, where you accept what appears. No, you don't reject what appears, but you are really questioning on a very fundamental level the way in which it appears. There's more to it than just an acceptance. And I think that's been clear in our comments, but it's an important point for trying to understand something about what's special about TSK. Okay, so we'll stop there for today. And see you next week.